Next on BYUSN, we'll break down the latest report that could majorly impact the future landscape of college athletics. And how would it affect BYU? Plus, what is the toughest three-game stretch on BYU football's 2024 schedule?
Olympians Courtney Wayman and Whitney Orton Morgan will join us to preview the Paris Games. And we'll discuss the latest in Big 12 expansion with Arizona beat writer Jason Scheer.
Another loaded show. Welcome to BYU Sports Nation, presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere. Happy Thursday, July 18th. I am Spencer Linton alongside a man who is so intensely training to become a stuntman prop for BYU basketball's dunk contest in the future, Jason Shepherd.
As you will see in this video of Elijah Crawford's unbelievable dunk in the annex, the only thing that I am capable of taking part in is being the prop that one Elijah Crawford is jumping over. Look, and let's be honest, it's not going to take much to jump over me. That is impressive. That is impressive.
Just don't touch Shep's hair. You know, come on, like that. Does it count if the hand hits the shoulder and they use that as an added bonus to push them a little bit more?
Look, I am not going to critique anything about that type of athleticism.
I saw somebody ask that question yesterday. Yeah, but does it count? Yes, it still counts.
Yeah.
Yes, it still counts.
Yes, yes.
Come on. But if you can, avoid, like...
Please,
avoid Shep's hair.
It's not like I have great hair, but okay. I would appreciate it just not touching the hair.
Listen, Jason Bourne's doppelganger needs you to adhere to.
Look,
you
are Matt Jason Damon Bourne's, and I would prefer that you not touch the
you
hair.
You are his stuntman, right?
Sure, why not?
Step in right there, easy money.
Completely
baby.
Off topic. Have you seen the movie The Fall Guy?
I have not seen it yet.
So good.
I need to
so
see
good.
It.
The Unknown Stuntman.
Speaking of stuntmen.
Yes.
Okay, that's what's on the mind.
So good.
Also on the mind, time to rise and shout. Things are changing again. Let's get to what's trending.
The league will be even better next year.
The 16-team conference is part of the deal.
They have a chip right now.
I think we're firmly in the top three conferences in America. Why would it take a job and not just fire people for one?
Oh, the race to stay relevant in the Power Four conference conversation. Things are changing once again, or so it would seem. It hasn't happened yet, but CBS Sports' Dennis Dodd reporting yesterday that NCAA President Charlie Baker recently presented to the NCAA Council a proposed governance structure that would create two Division Ones. He added that, quote, this would be to accommodate the Power Four's desire to have its own governance division to make its own rules, end quote. And that it is, he continues, not a full breakaway, but a recognition that commissioners don't want Division III presidents voting on roster caps anymore. The proposal is just in rudimentary form at this point, but gives a look into the potential future of college sports. Jason, if this happened, if we got two Division Ones and we got some movement on roster caps and Power Fours were able to govern themselves, essentially, how would this change things for BYU?
Yeah, the interesting word that you used a second ago in sort of teeing up the topic is it hasn't happened yet. And that's, it's gonna happen. There's been so much momentum for this to take place for a long, long time.
We're trying to stop a freight train, it feels like.
Yeah, and it truly is one of those scenarios where it's not an if, it's a win type situation. And how it affects BYU, what's interesting is if we had this conversation 2 years ago or 3 years ago before we knew BYU was going into the Big 12, our conversation probably would have had a completely different tone when BYU was an independent in football. Now that BYU is part of the Cool Kids Club and in the Power Four, it makes all the sense in the world. It really does. And I think there were a couple of things that stood out to me in the article from Dennis Dodd. First of all, the council that this was presented to, only of the 40 members on that council, only 14 are actually from a Power Conference.
Interesting.
Which is interesting that you've got the majority of the people on this council that you're pitching this to are not involved or would not be involved when this, again, not a breakaway, but this restructuring of governances happen. So it is interesting that you're trying to pitch this idea of, hey, we want to be able to govern the needs of our conference different than yours, but we're pitching it to a majority of people who are the others.
Yes.
That part's a little confusing. And I think at the end of the day, there's going to be enough power, regardless of how many numbers there are on that council who are in Power Four conferences, there's just going to be too much for anybody to say no to, because it's going to happen.
The wish list and the items on the agenda for Power Four conferences are straight up different than Group of Five conferences. They just are,
yeah.
Because it's a different money realm. And I don't necessarily like that there is such a wide gap between the two. And my initial concern when I first heard the idea of a separation from Power Fours and Group of Fives is that somehow the games were not going to happen. I felt like, oh man, Power Four teams need Group of Five teams for non-conference, and I still think it's good if they play games against each other in football. I don't think that's going away. I think that those games will continue, but the gap widens for sure. The money gap, the talent gap, and I hesitate to use that phrase, but it feels like it's moving towards more and more of a clear delineation.
Yeah.
Like it's just, you're on one side of the continent and then there is a divide and then the Group of Fives are on the other. I want the games to continue. I don't want that to go away. And frankly, BYU is playing an FCS opponent this year. Maybe that goes away. I don't know, but it feels like each of these groups need specific rules and specific ideals on roster caps and how much money. Group of Fives can't pay their athletes up to $20 million a year based on the school. They can't do that.
No.
So it's just, again, it's just a different galaxy almost that each of these groups would be operating in.
The economics between the two, and it really is a have and have not. That's what it boils down to. It's the economics of the whole thing. And I'm curious, you know, and I agree with you, and they made sure to say, again, not a breakaway.
Sure.
But don't you think this is the first step to a breakaway? Doesn't it feel like that's what it is?
It does.
Like
but
the early stage, it's like you know, if you're dating, or if you're when you're married, and things maybe aren't going great, and it's like, we're not going to get divorced, but how about we a little trial separation? Mm. You know what I mean?
What would that mean?
Yeah, you know what I mean.
What would it mean in this football conversation if a breakaway happened? Maybe regular season games or non-conference games can still happen, but when you get to the postseason, maybe the Group of Fives have their own playoff. That idea was floated out there. Maybe they'll take on the FCS format and do a 16-team playoff, straight playoff style with no bowl games in the Group of Five, and then the Power Four can have their own bowl tier and bowl structure, but you would be playing another Power Four team guaranteed in your bowl game. It just, the rich get richer, and the separation gets more and more significant.
Well, and let's not be naive to the fact that even if this happens or when this happens, there's still going to be, I don't know if a chasm is the right, you know, adjective to use, but you're still going to have, within this new structure, you're still going to have teams that can certainly afford to do more than others. And does it truly level the playing field is what I'm wondering.
Yeah.
Eventually. Because to me, it feels like this is just the first step in eventually completely separate entities.
It is fascinating to say the least. And is there no Group of Five automatic qualifier for the college football playoff anymore? Does this better the chances for all Power Four schools if you take away all the Group of Five teams to get into the highest level college football playoff? I don't know. But things are changing so rapidly that it's hard to wrap your mind around it. A lot of ideas are out there. I would like to see, at least in some form, the games continue through non-conference, because I think Power Four teams need Group of Five teams and the competition and the number of teams.
Well, and they need some. A lot of times they need the finances of it. they need the bye games.
Group of five teams need money to go and play at a Power Four.
Exactly. A lot of times it was the FCS teams need the money for their athletic departments. Well, it's going to get to the point where it's the G5s.
We're already there.
Yeah.
We're already there.
They're going to need the money to play teams in the Power
there
Four.
There are several Group of Five teams that are already in that boat and need the money by games to go play Power Four teams. It's not just FCS anymore.
Yeah, we're there. Whew. I agree with you. All right. So speaking specifically of BYU and this schedule, has nothing to do with changes or breaking away or restructuring or anything.
But Power Football.
But Power Four football. Is there a stretch of three games this year that you view as the toughest stretch for BYU? I think there is a clear area where that would come into, but where do you fall on that?
Yes. Now, I'm going to add this little caveat at the beginning. For a moment, I hesitated on at SMU, at Wyoming, and Kansas State. Like, I thought for a second, where would that three-game stretch fall on this? Again, Wyoming's not great, but playing in Laramie is the X factor right there, and the week before we play at SMU, who might be a preseason top 25 team, and Kansas State's picked to finish second in the conference. Like, that's an early tough stretch for BYU.
That may be the answer if you're talking about the most important stretch versus toughest.
For sure, but a little bit later on, I think the toughest three-game stretch starts in mid-October with a home game for BYU against Oklahoma State, who I think are being undervalued. They have 20 returning starters from a team that went to the Big 12 title game last year. 20! And they bring back the best running back in college football, I believe, Nollie Gordon II. So, starts with Oklahoma State, then BYU has the simple task of having to fly all the way across the country and play in Orlando at UCF. And I feel like UCF is a potential sleeping giant.
Yes.
It's the two-time zone game. It's East Coast. It's never been favorable to BYU, statistically speaking, to have to play those games, let alone try and win that game, let alone try to do it after you play Oklahoma State. And Arizona's the week before Oklahoma State. So there is a bye week in there, which is what made me hesitate. Like, there's a bye after the road trip to UCF. But it's the two-week buildup to the showdown with arguably the best team in the conference, and you have to play in Salt Lake City.
Yep.
So Oklahoma State in Provo, then you got to go to Orlando, then you got to play at Utah. So it's a four-week period, but those three games consecutively, I feel like, are the toughest stretch for BYU. How different or similar are you to mine?
Mostly the same,
okay.
But the caveat you put on the two-week gap between the UCF game and then Utah.
Yeah, that helps.
To me, if there was not a bye week before the Utah game, I would have the exact same three that you did. And by no means do I mean that then makes that game easy. That's not why I'm not adding Utah to it. But because you have 2 weeks to prepare, I think you will be better prepared and you'll have a little bit of time to get healthy and a little bit of a break and a little bit of a breather. So for me, I'm going to start one game earlier, and I'm going to start with the game in Provo on the 12th of October with Arizona.
See, I'm with you. Arizona's a tough game.
That's a dynamic quarterback. We know what they did last year, and yet they've gone through a lot of changes, but they still have a lot of talent on that roster, and the preseason, you know, prognosticators still have them being a upper echelon team in the Big 12.
And they got at least one first-place vote.
Yes.
Five teams get a first-place vote in the Big 12 preseason poll.
Oklahoma State, as you said, speaks for itself. I think they're the best team in the conference. They would have had my vote at number one. And then at UCF. So, yes, you get two of those three at home, which is certainly good. But to me, that stretch, to me, is the toughest.
Mm.
If there wasn't a bye before Utah, I would have gone where you did.
So there is a bye before Arizona, which helps BYU prepare for the beginning of that three-game stretch, but tough all around regardless. So you're just one game earlier.
Yes.
I include the bye and then the showdown at Utah. That's BYU's toughest game on the schedule, is at Utah.
Sure, of course it is.
But there is a bye before it.
Yes.
You decide. Our question of the day, what do you think is the toughest three-game stretch on BYU football's schedule? At Marshall_BYU on X says easily Oklahoma State, UCF, and Utah. Two teams expected to finish top of the conference, and I think UCF is sneaky good. It also doesn't help that BYU has to fly out to Florida to play the Knights, and Utah at Rice-Eccles Stadium has been difficult for everyone. Okay, Nathan Steele on X answers, UCF, Utah, Kansas. Oh, yeah. There's that other team, Kansas, who's also one of the five that got first place votes and is expected to compete for a championship that follows Utah. UCF, long road trip, tough environment. Yes, there is a bye week, but a bye around the rivalry game will hardly be restful. And Kansas, even in Provo, will be tough to beat. You know what's wild about this? There are so many answers, which just tells me that the balance is crazy off the charts. The balance of difficulty for
this
BYU.
Is life in this conference.
Yes.
No easy weeks.
Unless you have one of the four easiest schedules in the conference.
Who has that?
I kid. Hashtag BYUSN on X, Facebook, and Instagram. But some schedules are way clearly harder in the Big 12 than others.
Oh, boy.
Shout out to our friend Cougar Sets, who said, if you don't want weird schedules for teams, then don't have a 16-team conference.
Yeah.
A lot of truth in that.
All right, tune in tomorrow for BYU Sports Nation's A History of Offensive Innovation. It's a special that we had, and we'll continue to celebrate the 100th season of BYU football by airing that tomorrow at noon Eastern time on BYU TV and BYU Radio.
After the break, we have not one, but two Olympians in Studio B, Courtney Wayman and Whitney Orton Morgan, preview their runs literally in the Paris Games is BYUSN. Welcome back to Studio B and BYU Sports Nation. I'm Spencer Linton alongside Jason Shepherd. It's time for our daily trivia question. If you're new to the program over the past couple of weeks, we're celebrating the 100th season of BYU football. And each day our producer Colton Potter asks us a BYU football trivia question to tease our in-depth knowledge. Colton, what do you have for us today?
All right, today's question. BYU has 10 first-round draft picks in program history, with Zach Wilson being the most recent in 2021. Who was BYU's first-round draft pick?
Is it Marv Allen?
No, we're going way back. First round?
No, I can't remember the first-round pick for BYU.
Can we get any kind of a hint?
Is there a decade
you can give us?
70s?
I'll give you a hint.
Okay.
He did not play in the same decade he was drafted in.
So it was
so
late
60s 70s. Into 70s, 70s into 80s.
It was late 70s. I know who it is. The name is right there. He played on Mark Wilson's team in 79. Defender. Ah!
All right, let's see the answer.
See.
And the
he
answer
said his
is...
name. It's Mark Wilson.
Oh!
It was Mark Wilson. It was.
I was trying to think way back. I almost had dismissed that era because I thought it was going to be before that.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So who? I'm trying to remember the name of the man I'm thinking of. Maybe he was BYU's first, like, because we talked like top 3-round picks a little while back. So maybe he was the first to go in the top 3 rounds. Anyway, it was Mark Wilson.
Mark Wilson. There you go.
First-round pick. Okay. It's a random trivia question of the day. Let's roll out today's headlines.
CBS Sports' Dennis Dodd reported yesterday that NCAA President Charlie Baker recently presented to the NCAA Council a proposed governance structure that would create, quote, two Division Ones. Dodd added that, quote, this would be to accommodate the Power Four's desire to have its own governance division to make its own rules, and that it is not a full breakaway, but a recognition that commissioners don't want Division III presidents voting on roster caps anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The proposal is just in the rudimentary form at this point.
There you go. BYU quarterback Keaton Slovis selected by the DC Defenders with the 12th pick in the college UFL draft yesterday. Slovis currently still signed with the Indianapolis Colts, but if he does not make the Colts squad and seeks an opportunity in the UFL, the Defenders would own his rights. Training camp begins for Slovis and Indianapolis next Wednesday.
Congrats to the BYU women's volleyball program, who earned their fifth straight AVCA Team Academic Award, as announced by the AVCA yesterday. The award honors volleyball teams that maintain a year-long grade point average of 3.30. It is the 10th time overall that BYU has received this award.
Very impressive.
Those are today's headlines. Now some opinions in the whip.
All right, our good friends at Vanquish the Foe ran a simulation for the 2024 BYU football season in the new college football video game, and BYU finished with a record of 6-7.
They got to a bowl game.
Would you take that right now, or are you rolling the dice and playing it out?
Jason, a losing record is just not enough for me to be like, yeah, let's do it. Because BYU wins the bowl game and we're talking about 7-6, then maybe I start to consider it. But I feel like this team is capable of better than 6-7. Like, I know that Vegas says 5 wins. Jason, I cannot in my good conscience be like, yes. At least they got to a bowl game.
No. Right.
A losing record, back-to-back seasons at 6-7 after 5-7, no way. Play it out on the field.
Okay, I'm taking it.
Really? Losing record.
But bowl eligible. It's still showing improvement. You're still getting
one game.
But you're still getting better, and you're going to a bowl.
I don't know.
And I agree with you. I think they can be better than that. But if you're asking me, am I rolling the dice or am I taking this that I know they're getting to a bowl game, that they're going to get at least 6 wins? I'm taking that right now.
Oh, I want to revisit this in December. Let's do it. Like, this is fun because this, I thought you would agree with me, but you don't. Yeah. You would take 6-7.
Because look, it's not the record that they ultimately would want or that anybody would want for them, but it's still showing improvement and you're getting to a bowl.
Technically speaking, yes. Excitement for the fans, yikes. I want BYU to have that natural boost of enthusiasm back from the fan base. I think more than 6 wins are required for that. Hey, ESPN surveyed NFL executives, coaches, and scouts to rank the top 10 players in the league at each position. Puka Nacua, not ranked in the top 10 for wide receivers. Interesting. Is Puka Nacua a top 10 wide receiver in the NFL right now?
Yes, he is. And that's both an opinion of mine and facts. If you look at the numbers last year in the NFL, he was top 10 in receptions and top 10 in receiving yards. He was not top 10 in touchdowns, but that still, to me, is a top 10 receiver in this league.
Wasn't he second team All-Pro?
Yeah.
So wouldn't that qualify you as a top 10 receiver in the NFL?
Shameful that he is not a top 10 receiver in this ranking.
It was a little strange, right?
Yeah.
That it wouldn't be after the year he had. Like, I'd certainly give him the nod that he's somewhere in the top 10, even if it's 9 or 10. Like, he's in the top 10.
All right, Atlanta Falcons put out a profile piece they did on running back Tyler Allgeier yesterday, and as part of that, they asked him to describe his running style, and he said, quote, like a bowling ball. Is that how you would describe Allgeier's running style?
He certainly enjoys the physicality of football.
Yes.
And the contact. He has an incredible ability to bounce off tacklers. Bowling balls don't necessarily bounce, Jason, so I need some elastability in there, if that's a word. Like, and he has the super fast start-stop mode, you know? So I was thinking of, like, it's almost like, have you ever seen one of those jumping spiders?
Yeah.
Like,
the, yeah.
Like move, like, they're just there, and then boom, boom. Like, that's kind of what Tyler is to me. I was trying to think of, like, an object, like, I can't think of an object that is like that, but he has the burst.
Frogger?
Yeah, maybe.
Frogger?
Yes! But he has the burst ability like that, does he not?
Honestly, I think it describes pretty good. I agree with what you said. You know, bowling balls don't necessarily bounce off. They kind of go through, which I'm perfectly fine with, too. We saw that at BYU as well. Look, if that's how he wants to describe himself, who am I to disagree?
Sure. Maybe Demolition Derby?
There you go.
Just running over people and going around
what
people.
What were those sound effects again?
Yeah. Oh,
boy.
Don't challenge me on my sound effects, Jason. I'll bring it all day.
Got the guy from Police Academy over here.
Oh, it's so good. Up next, as promised, two Olympians live in Studio B to preview their runs in the Paris Olympics. Courtney Wayman and Whitney Orton Morgan on the way after this. Welcome back to BYU Sports Nation. We are live in Studio B and moved over to the soft chairs, the Cougar Council Room, for good reason to have a long-awaited conversation with two outstanding women and elite athletes. They're both headed to the Olympics in Paris. They are Courtney Wayman and Whitney Orton Morgan. Welcome back to BYU Sports Nation.
Thanks. We're happy to be here.
Understandably, this is a wild ride for you to get to Paris. And we'll start with a question for both of you. But Courtney, take us back to the moment when you first realized that you were going to represent Team USA in the Olympics and what those emotions were like.
Yeah, I would say the moment that I crossed that line and realized, okay, yes, I'm an Olympian. It was just a lot of pride and being really proud of how I've gotten there and how I've been able to show up, and a lot of gratitude of getting to that line and getting that line healthy and believing. And yeah, so I would say a lot of pride and a lot of gratitude. And those were the two biggest emotions that filled me for sure.
Same question for you, Whitney. And yours was a little bit different.
It was, yeah.
You got a phone call from the great Diljit Taylor. Yeah. And I believe she simply asked, how's your French?
Yep.
Okay, so what was that? The realization of, oh my gosh, she's telling me that I'm going to the Olympics.
Yeah, I was honestly just so shocked. Because I had days to kind of like dream about it and like hope for it, you know, because I did my race like a week before I got the news, you know, so I had a few days to like just like hope, but not hope too much. But then also like it was just really exciting when we got the good news, you know. I was very shocked, but just super, super happy.
Sure. So, to clarify, you finished fifth in the 5,000 and you needed to finish top three.
Yep.
So what transpired there that opened up the position for you? Remind everyone how that happened.
Yeah, it was a pretty crazy weekend because we knew there was like a potential because we knew a few of the women were going to double and we didn't know whether they were going to pick one or so. We're like, we're just going to keep the hope alive. But so yeah, that was kind of like the theme for the weekend. I was like, there's a sliver of hope. I just kept like yelling it. I'm like, the sliver of hope, it's still alive, you know. But so it started with Parker Valby. She took fourth right ahead of me, and the first step was that she needed to make it in the 10K. So like a few days later, she ran the 10K and she got second, so she made the team in the 10K, and there was word that she would pick the 10K, but she was still undecided. And then the next day after that, Eleanor St. Pierre, she's the one that took first in the 5K, and if she made the 15, there was word she for sure wasn't doing the 5K. Because she was just doing it for fun and for prize money and all the good things, you know. And she's incredible at it. But so she, right when she finished the 1500, she was like, I'm not doing the 5K. So I was like, oh, it's still alive. And so, yeah, once that happened, we just needed to wait for Parker's decision. And it took her a few days, and then she chose the 10K. So here we are.
And I think that was one of the questions that I had was, did you know that it was at least a possibility, however mm-hmm. small it was, or
yeah.
had you really moved on? It sounds like you had an idea. I'm curious, even with it just being a small, do you still like, I don't want to get my hopes up here because if it doesn't happen, then I'm going to be crushed. Like, how did you handle the emotions of that week waiting?
I feel like what really helped is that I had no regrets with my performance. And I felt like I was just like fully trusting whatever is going to happen is going to happen because I did my part. And it was kind of just like, it's in God's hands. If he wants me to go, and then I will go. And we just kept hoping for the sliver of hope, and it just kept growing slowly and slowly. And we were all just manifesting it, honestly. And yeah, so yeah, I had no regrets. I ran my hardest race. I ran my smartest and toughest that I could have raced with my build and everything.
Off knee surgery, no less.
Yeah, so that was kind of the thing. It was like I didn't have a lot of time. I wasn't favored to make the team, you know. So I was just happy. I'm a happy girl.
The smile says everything. That's for sure. Okay, Courtney, I already mentioned Diljit Taylor's name, but. You've been outspoken about her role in your life and helping you get to this point and find all your success at BYU. If you could summarize what she does for you and what she's doing for you right now, what would you say?
To summarize what I would say she does for me is she leads with a lot of love. How she navigates our relationship as, you know, individuals, as coach, athlete, it's all out of love. And I think she coaches me with so much love, so much passion. And when she leads with that, I feel like I've been able to lean on that. I've been able to grow with that. I've been able to see where I can go with that. And I think because of that, it's created a very special bond between us. And Yeah, I would say she leads with love.
Mm. Whitney, what would you add to that as far as your relationship with Diljit Taylor goes and what she's doing to help you prepare for this?
Yeah, I feel like with Coach Taylor, it's amazing because she's just helped me reach a level I never thought I possibly could, right? She's consistently believed and kind of, she has that high level mentality, right, about her. I feel like anyone that meets her is like, yeah, she's like on another level. And so she elevates everyone around her, and I've just seen her elevate all of us. And that's why we are here today, honestly. Mm. Like, we all came from smaller places, you know, or I didn't specifically have a dream to be an Olympian. I didn't actually believe that for myself when I was a young girl, right? When you're in high school or when you're young, you're like, I don't know, for me, I didn't necessarily think that was possible for me.
The Pride of Penguich did not believe that?
No, the Penguich people actually have always been saying it. They actually have. I can say that they have been the ones that have been like, from the beginning, I'm like, you guys are crazy. But yeah, here we are. And Coach Taylor, she elevates us all. And she continues to believe and continues to give everything. Like, she works her tail off for us to have these opportunities. So, yep, the least we can do is work just as hard. Mm.
This would be a question for both of you. And Courtney, let's start with you. Obviously, being able to represent your country is an unbelievable experience. But along with that, you also are going to get to represent BYU. And there are a lot of current and former BYU athletes that will be participating in Paris. What does that mean to you to not just represent Team USA, but also represent Brigham Young University?
Yeah, something that we've really been talking about as we're getting closer to the Olympics and being an Olympian, it's that it takes a village. And while it might be just myself racing in the steeple, and it might be just Whitney racing the 5K and all the other individuals that are representing BYU in their sports, it's more than just us. So we might be out there doing it, and that might just be us, but it takes a village. And so with all the love and support that we've had, I mean, we're back here at Sports Nation, and we get to do this because you guys support us. We get these opportunities because we've had so much love and support. So to be able to be at the pinnacle of our sport and be at the pinnacle of athletics in general and be Olympians, but get to wear Team USA on our chests, it means more, like you said, than just the country. Mm. And BYU has given us so many opportunities, and we've been backed with so much love, so much support. So it's an honor to be able to hopefully represent well and, you know, give back to what we've been given.
What about you, Whitney?
Yeah, I just think, like, that was all incredible, by the way. She's got away with words. But I just think, like, it's all just progression, right? Like, I started in Panguitch, and then next level was BYU. And I think all of those things are preparing us for the moment that we're in right now. And we couldn't have been here without BYU. And I've said it, like, BYU is an incredible place. Like, the resources, the coaching, just everything that they give their athletes is kind of insane. Like, I remember just being shocked my first year, like, what in the world? Like, we get all of this stuff, you know? And so, yeah, I think just the opportunity that is here and the amazing Brian, Tom, you know, Liz,
yeah,
all of those
support staff.
Like, the support staff, it's kind of crazy here, and I think that all played a part, you know, to let us be here.
So. Outstanding. All right, an elite steeplechaser in Courtney Wayment and an elite distance runner, Whitney Wharton Morgan, around BYU Sports Station. By the way, can we call it Steeple U at this point?
I think we can.
Can we clear it? Like, that's, come on.
I think we can. Yeah. I think Coach T's done her, continues
yeah, yeah.
to do
Can we call this a running school, Whitney?
I would say so, yeah.
It's incredible. It's incredible what everyone has done, and you have been leading from the front, that's for sure. We'll finish with this. Everyone has the goal to get to the Olympics is a huge goal achieved in and of itself. But now that you're there, where are your expectations and goals for the event that you're going to run in Paris? Courtney, we'll begin with you.
Yeah, I think expectations are high, but I think they're not filled with pressure. I've made the last two world teams for the last 2 years, and I was a finalist there. And so I would like to be more than a finalist, but I'm going to be grateful for every step of the way, because nothing is guaranteed when you get on that line. And so I want to see how well I can do and do it with no ceiling or no cap or no limit as to what I think I can do. So, but yeah, there's a lot of goals, but you got to start with the prelim. Mm.
And Whitney, how about you? Goals and expectations.
Yeah, I'm in a little bit of a different situation than Court. I haven't made a team yet, so this is kind of like an exciting and new experience for me. I feel like going into the trials, like it's just like, I'm just giving everything I have, right? Like I don't have room for like much error. Like I gotta just like give it all. And I think I'm just gonna kind of ride that train and just continue to just give everything I have. And that's kind of been the goal that me and Coach T made for the Olympics, because we didn't make, like we had a goal for this season and the end goal was kind of make the team. Like that was what it was for me. Like it's kind of crazy that I did with my situation. And so like we made a new goal, just like just run your heart out. And so that's kind of what's going to be in my mind as I'm preparing, and I'm just going to give everything I have. So
let it be written. We're so grateful that both of you were here with us on BYU Sports Nation. We're going to give you some karma to take to Paris. Good luck to both of you. Congratulations again.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. Yep.
All right, tune in for BYU Sports Nation next Wednesday on Pioneer Day for an Olympic preview special featuring interviews with Cougar Olympians. Maybe this one that you just watched or listened to. Wednesday, July 24th at noon Eastern Time on BYU TV and BYU Radio.
After the break, more on the latest rumblings within potential Big 12 expansion, specifically with Jason Shear of WildcatAuthority.com. He joins the program. This is BYUSN.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by The BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Welcome back to BYU Sports Nation. We are live in Studio B, and we welcome in now the senior editor and publisher of WildcatAuthority.com. His name is Jason Shear. Obviously, he is an expert in Arizona Wildcat athletics, and he's back on BYUSN. Jason, how are you?
Doing well. Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
It feels like things are changing every day. We discussed the report from Dennis Dodd earlier in the show about potential separation as that gap widens between the Power Four schools and the Group of Five schools. But we'll get to that in a moment. I just want to initially start with the 16-team Big 12, Jason. And do you think it's going to get bigger with everything you're hearing in your circles that maybe Brett Yormark has his visions on something bigger than a 16-team conference?
Yeah, I think it's going to get bigger. I want to be clear, nothing's imminent. This isn't something that we're going to hear about next week or probably even next month. It's going to be a little bit. But, I think Yormark hinted at it at Big 12 Media Days when he said we're open for business. And he's absolutely open for business. They want to make sure that the Big 12 is as strong as possible. And if that means adding a few more new schools, then that's what he's going to try to do.
So when you say a few more schools, obviously the schools that have been prominently discussed in the reports and rumors and all of that stuff is Clemson and Florida State. Do you think it stops there, or does it get bigger than even just those two schools if it happens?
No, I don't think it stops there. I think you're probably four is the goal. In an ideal world for your mark, it's Florida State, Clemson, Miami and Louisville. I think NC State and Virginia Tech are right there also. It could be all of them. It could be two of them. But that top four group is the priority for Yormark. And, I don't see it going beyond six unless we head towards the two power conference, situations where each one has like 40 teams. But, it's definitely, from what I understand, it's Florida State and Clemson, and then he would take a look at possibly adding a few more other schools.
Jason Shear is on BYU Sports Nation, publisher, senior editor of WildcatAuthority.com. Let's talk about Arizona Athletics, who are making the transition from the now disbanded Pac-12 into the expanded Big 12. Now, of the four corner schools, Jason, notably Utah and Arizona State were not as excited about Colorado and Arizona, and this is very public, about making the jump. So does Arizona view this as a lateral move, or with basketball in play and everything that's happened, do they feel like this was a jump up?
Yeah, it's not a lateral move. You know, there's always going to be the people that grew up on the Pac-12 and are very upset about the move and don't like change, and that's understandable. But when you take a look at the Big 12, I think there's a few opinions that Arizona fans have. Number one, you know, there's a lot of parity in this conference. There were years in the Pac-12 with Washington, Oregon, USC, when they were really good, where you'd start the season and Arizona would just have no chance. And that's changed, you know, credit to the previous coaching staff and the current one as well, as that attitude has changed. And then you look at basketball and Arizona, we know about Arizona's basketball history. Well, now it's in the best conference in America. And the basketball excitement is off the charts. I mean, people are absolutely pumped for the Big 12 basketball season and playing teams like Kansas, Houston, all that. You know, it's just there's a lot of excitement surrounding the Big 12 right now.
As far as the football is concerned, Arizona picked fifth in the preseason media poll. And I know I had a chance to talk with, you know, Fafita and a lot of the players that were there at Big 12 Media Day, and super impressed, by the way, with all of the Wildcats that I was able to speak with. And, you know, they not surprisingly all said, it's not where people pick us. We don't worry about that. But I'll ask you, what did you make of being picked fifth, and those and the fan base of the Wildcats, how did they view being picked fifth in the Big 12?
You know, there's a lot of parity in the conference, but I think, and myself included, I thought Arizona's too low. And I think they're being punished a little bit in the preseason for losing their head coach, which I get, you know, a lot of coaching changes and all that. And they lost some players, but I think they replaced them pretty well also. And they added some guys that all play pretty vital roles on this team that I like quite a bit. And so, you know, it fifth to me feels a little low. I think they'll finish in the top three, but at the same time, I get it. New team in the Big 12, there's a lot of parity. It's not the type of situation where I'm up in arms freaking out because they finished fifth, or they were picked to finish fifth.
Jed Fish made some big time news for sure. He did great things for Arizona. And to your point, he leaves, and then I think there's just this natural kind of acceptance by most average college football fans, like, well, Arizona's going to take a big step back. Why do you feel so bullish against those claims from your typical college football fan that Arizona's going to maybe be even better in the post-Jed Fish era?
You know, I think part of it is that I'm familiar with Brent Brennan's work and what he had to do at San Jose State. I mean, there was a time where San Jose State's financial support was so low, the coaching staff were buying meals for the players.
Good grief.
The facilities there aren't good. And so I think people look at his record at San Jose State and say, oh, it's not very good, without really looking at the entire picture. I really like the coaching staff he put together. I like that they're all aggressive recruiters. There's multiple head coaches, and Dino Babers and Danny Gonzalez were former head coaches. Dwayne Aquina has been in college football forever. You get Noah Fafita, you get McMillan and all that. I just think that this coaching staff knows what they're doing. And is going to be able to accomplish their goal.
BYU and Arizona over the last decade have played each other a couple of times. So, obviously teams are always different year in and year out, but maybe just some thoughts. The Wildcats come up to Provo to take on the Cougars. Maybe just some early thoughts on BYU, maybe that matchup in Provo coming up in a couple of months.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you go on the road, it's a tough game. And we've seen Arizona and BYU play some really good ones. Someone this morning asked me who the natural rival in the Big 12 besides ASU would be. And I kind of lean towards BYU because there is a history there. And you wonder that early in the season if both teams are kind of figuring themselves out a little bit. And when that happens, that's sometimes when upsets happen. And, you know, I assume Arizona will be favored, but I'm not sure at that point of the season or really ever Arizona football is going to be overlooking anyone. And, you know, Brent Brennan said it at Media Day. He said, what makes this league so fun is that you can lose to any team and you can beat any team on any given Saturday. And he legitimately believes that. And this is one of those types of games.
What do people not know about the Arizona-Arizona State rivalry that they should know, since you brought it up, and it's the clear regional longtime rivalry for the Wildcats?
I think a lot of people assume it's just a normal rivalry game. It is not. Like, it is legit dislike. Like, the fan bases do not like each other. The players, you know, a lot of them have offers from Arizona and Arizona State. And so whatever school they don't choose, They tend not to like very much, but it is heated. I remember I grew up in Southern California, and I watched USC and UCLA growing up, and my first territorial cup, it was just different. You know, ASU and Arizona is just different, and I think that people look at other rivalries and assume, you know, those rivalries are the best, but I'd put Arizona ASU against anyone in terms of just pure teams not liking each other and competitiveness and all that.
Let's bring it back to one of our original questions to you and the possibility of expansion. And obviously, asking you for your opinion, not a report, but if you were to put a percentage on the chance that the Big 12 expands, whether it's two or four, not talking timeline, but just that they expand, what's the percentage you're giving it right now?
Oh, I'd say 75%.
That high.
And look, it could happen in a year. It could happen in 2 years. But we are absolutely headed for another round of expansion. I have no doubt about that. That's why you're seeing the reports of two D1s being discussed and private equity being discussed in the Big 12 and all that. I would be shocked if there is some sort of realignment within the next couple of years.
Well, let's continue on that because I talked about it earlier, but Dennis Dodd's report comes out. You mentioned two Division Ones. What will this mean for the majority of major college athletics?
In my opinion, it's not great, right? Like it's pretty much a pro model at that point. Like it would be looked at as a minor leagues and a major leagues, and how do you deal with the transfer portal? And I get the core belief behind it that some schools are just not able to compete with others, but I don't know. It doesn't feel right. You know, like it doesn't feel like college athletics. And I think there's still a lot of movement to be done for us to actually get in that direction. But, you know, if we're even talking about it, it feels like there's an issue here beyond just, oh, let's make two D1s. I think we need to take a look at everything going on financially and all that and kind of figure out where college athletics is as a whole.
Jason Scheer of WildcatAuthority.com on BYU Sports Nation. Jason, great to talk to you. Thanks for the time today.
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
You got it. October 12th, BYU hosting Arizona in football. And then can't wait to watch BYU and Arizona tip off in basketball.
Yeah.
As one of just like 20 marquee Big 12 games that BYU is going to play this year.
Yeah. The basketball conference, look, we got a taste of it last year, just how awesome it is. And now you add programs like Arizona to the mix. Come on. It's going to be even better. Cannot wait. All right, BYU Athletics announced that BYU Sports Camps at Sea will be part of BYU's official cruise, Cruising with the Cougs, in April of 2025. Sports camps will include football, basketball, soccer, volleyball, cheer, and more, with BYU coaches, players, and legends like Jimmer Fredette and Austin Colley. Do not wait. Space is limited. Check out BYUcruise.com for all the details.
After the break, today's rise and shout out goes to an elite position group for their work off the field. You don't want to miss this. BYUSN after the break.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Our question of the day on BYU Sports Nation: what is the toughest three-game stretch on BYU football's 2024 schedule? At 1012 Network on X says it's Oklahoma State, at UCF, bye week, at Utah. That said, the non-conference slate is sneaky tough. Yeah. That's exactly what I was saying, especially with road games at both SMU and Wyoming. Our elite voice of the day, presented by PAX, Healthcare Elevated, comes from Average Johan on X, who says, those three, Arizona, Oklahoma State, at UCF, right before that in-state game looked pretty tough. The Utah game onward should be easy wins. Easy wins against Kansas?
I think, yeah. There's any part of this schedule that's going to be easy this year for a lot of students, not just BYU. It's a tough – people are going to find out how tough this conference is week in and week out.
No doubt about it.
All right, our Rise and Shout-Out presented by Mountain America, the official credit union of BYU Athletics. Who gets it today, Spencer?
I think we should give it to a fantastic group of BYU football players, specifically the linebackers, who went and visited some kids in the hospital who are going through some challenges. This was from Danielle Marie Hunt, who said her son Cash, the kid's been telling anyone who will listen in the last few days that BYU football players were coming to see him. Grateful to see these awesome players for taking time out of their summer to come in. So cool to go help the kids and visit them in the hospital. Lift the spirits.
Absolutely. Love it when you see athletes being able to do things like that. It's really cool.
Our thanks to today's guests, Courtney Wayman, Whitney Orton Morgan, and Jason Scheer.
Conversation continues 24/7 on X, Instagram, and Facebook.
For Jason Shepherd, I'm Spencer Linton. Shout out to Vance Law. Man, it's time, my friends. BYU basketball, football, the Big 12. Year two is right around the corner. Go Cougs!